Welcome to the podcast Real Resilience. My name is Tirsa van Til. In 2016, I moved from Amsterdam to New York City. There, I met a variety of colorful and inspiring people whose presence and personalities have made my life more interesting and who have challenged me to leave my blind judgment behind. In the first 2.5 months of 2021, I had the pleasure to travel through North America to interview these people and to learn more about their successes, their losses, and their ability to overcome adversity. For this episode, I spoke with Curry, who grew up in a religious Texan family where homosexuality was viewed with condemnation. When he came out to his parents at the age of 26, life how they knew it was turned upside down. I sat down with mom Lee Ann, dad Jeff, and Curry in the barn of their beautiful Texan home to talk about their journey as a family. I also sat down with Southern Baptist Reverend Jeffrey, who will shine his light on how the church views same-sex relationships and how homosexuality can, or cannot, fit in a religious life.
Growing up in Texas, in small-town Texas, it creates an atmosphere of not a lot of inclusivity, just naturally and regionally, and being a part of a family that is religiously based. It was scary because we grow up to be told that the homosexual lifestyle is wrong, and it is a one-way ticket to hell once you die.
What you want to do with your life is fine. It's not my, it's not me. It's not impacting me. I don't need to worry about it. But it was never in my life until then.
Right after Curry came out, I had been the one to say, don't talk, I don't want to hear about it or something. I don't remember how I said it.
You just said, can you put a pause before you?
Yeah, and then there was one time that Curry and I were talking, and he said something. I was like, well, he's just talking about work and work and work. And I was like, well, you're not talking about... I don't remember what I said, but he said, you told me not to, and it crushed me. Your return, my greatest fear will be
that you will crash and burn, and I won't feel your fire. So it is not what God desires. God desires either, according to 1 Corinthians 7, according to what Paul says there, for the believer, there are two options regarding intimacy and sexuality. Either you are in a relationship with, if you're female with a male, if you're male with a female, in a covenant before God, and then God has made that available for us to enjoy that intimate type physical relationship, but also it helps us to, you know, be fruitful and fill, as talks about in Genesis 1. The other option for a believer, according to what Paul says in 1 Corinthians 7, is to be celibate.
This story has many angles and truths, and has confronted me with my own judgment and biases. In these conversations, I have tried to let those go. I invite you to do the same while listening.
And it took me a very long time. I came out at 26 to my parents. So there was a long struggle. I prayed nightly to not be gay. And I don't mean to say that my family was religious and I wasn't. I was too. And so it was an internal struggle even at that. Like, I didn't want to be this way. And you grow up saying, like, this is a choice. And ultimately you have to accept that it's not a choice. I was created in this image, and that's who I am, and that's who I was meant to be. And once I was able to finally accept that, then I can move on to the possibility of other people accepting it.
Over recent decades, studies have shown that American society has grown more welcoming to the gay community. However, discrimination based on sexual orientation is still a serious concern in the United States. In 2001, 53% of respondents stated they believe gay or lesbian relations to be morally wrong. But in 2020, this number has fallen to 32%.
Well, there were very early instances having an older brother, there was some camaraderie as far as like exposure to porn. And I realized early on that I wasn't looking at the women in the images. And so I knew that there was something different. And then the way that I felt around people at school, like the crushes that I would develop or like the nerves that I would feel were not necessarily around the girls. And not to say that I didn't try to have crushes on people or think that I had crushes on women, because I certainly made efforts to live that normal lifestyle, and I could convince myself in a lot of ways that I was normal and that I could have a normal, you know, in quotes, normal life that way. But it was very early on. I mean, especially in puberty. I mean, once your hormones start really taking off, like it's your body tells you. Which what you're feeling and what is natural to you. So, and that's another emphasis on why it doesn't feel like a choice, because my body's responding to this in its way that is my mind can't control. It was something that I did not want to accept, and I didn't want people to think that of me. And it was a fear, and I got called gay several times growing up because I enjoyed theater and I was a performer, and I had effeminate, you know, qualities to my personality. So it was something that I was taught was wrong, because I was ridiculed for it. And it's something I really didn't want to be. So I tried everything within my power to convince myself and convince other people that I was not gay. Even past the point of like me just knowing it. There was a time in my car where I just said it out loud to myself, but that was years before I said it to anybody else. And it's because like I really wanted to try to have a life where I wasn't gay. And I dated many women, I had sex with many women, and it... when I say not many, many, but certainly enough chances to try,
right.
And realize that it's just, things weren't in it. And it wasn't, I couldn't change what I naturally felt. And it's one of those things where you look at your life, you're like, do I spend my entire life unhappy to convince people that I'm not this way, or to make other people happy, make my family happy? And do I make, if I get married to a woman, do I, you know, deal her a life where she is in a loveless marriage, where she doesn't actually know who she's married to, and then have children that don't know who their father is? It just seems like it's not unfair to me, but it's not unfair to the people that I would bring into my web of lies, so to speak.
He decided that against what he understood the scripture teaches. So the question would become, what will be ultimately our source of authority? Will our source of authority ultimately be subjective? You know, whatever you like is good for you, whatever I like is good for me, or will it be objective? Is there some objective sense in which God expects certain things from us, and there are certain parameters that he has laid out, and we're not allowed to go outside those parameters, or we find ourselves in rebellion? And if the answer is that, if there are, yes, there are some parameters that God has laid out, then when we go outside those, we must consider it what it would be, which would be rebellion. Mm-hmm. I know, you know, sin is a harsher word, but to me it's not. So, you know, sin is when we don't do what God tells us to do, or we, you know, fail to do what we know is right.
How do you know, as a religious person, if coming out is the right thing when the scripture teaches the opposite?
Well, once I started coming out to friends and then sort of letting myself, you know, be myself, I just realized how much happier I was and how much happier a life I could have, and the sort of weight being lifted slowly. And the only remaining weight was this secret that I was keeping from my family. And if I was to have a relationship with another man, how do I navigate moving forward with, you know, a lifetime of being a part of my family while maintaining a lifetime of having a relationship with a man? Like, it's a recipe for disaster that will eventually unfold whether I want to or not. So I basically had to just kind of take the reins of it and say, you know, this could go the wrong way, but I trust that they love me, and I do think that losing my brother almost benefits the situation, because I am all that they have at this point as a child. So I think the fear of losing another kid sort of helps them hold on to, you know, staying in my life and supporting it in the way that they can.
When he said, "I've got something to tell you," I think both of our thoughts were, "Oh shit, he's sick," or something really bad. You know, it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like an immediacy, bad.
Yeah.
So, okay, when he said it, it was kind of a, well, that's not good, but it's not the fear thing that that immediately popped up when he says, we've got to talk.
There's definitely emotions behind his words, troubled emotions.
Yeah.
So as a parent, you're hearing that and also seeing the struggle within him. And so we immediately brace ourselves to, you know, what are we about to, you know, walk through. And he was just broken, you know, when he was very vulnerable when he told us. And I just immediately went to him and put my hands on either side of his face, and I said, "Look at your mama." And I said, not one second do you go without our love. Not one second. So, and I said, "Do you understand that and hear that?" And he said, "Yes." You go through all the emotions with it.
Can you explain a little bit about what those emotions are for you as a parent or as a mom?
Well, there's a fear. One, it's your first reaction is, I want to protect him. I'm afraid for him on what this means for him. We are in a time where it's more accepted, but yet there also is persecution and difficulty and rejection. So I don't want any of that for him. Then you also have your typical dreams that when you have a baby or when you get married and have a children, you have your typical dreams of, you know, watching them watch their bride walk down the aisle and be beside. When our boys were born, they just started letting dads in the labor and delivery rooms. We had to go to classes the first time for Josh, for Jeff to even be allowed in there.
Oh.
So prior to that, dads weren't allowed in there. So.
And this is early 80s.
Yes, Josh was born in 85. So we had to go through classes for him to be allowed into the room. And prior to that, you know, they weren't. So, but experiencing that together, you want your sons to have, you know, watch a life that they created with somebody enter this world. Those were all our joys. And so I guess you tend to want the things that are your greatest joys, you want your children to have those greatest joys because that's what you've known. So you have to grieve all of those dreams that you created as a parent.
You know, I've said my biggest struggle is my own selfishness. You know, like she said, the loss of what you thought life had in store for you, through both loss of Josh and a loss of that dream of what was out there. My selfishness, just because we live in a very, very conservative area. because here in this area, it's not, it is, you know, not viewed with fear of homosexuality. It's a view of condemnation, or there's something wrong with it, or that kind of thing is the a strong interpretation in our area. So my fears, as much as anything, were, holy crap, you know, what is my family going to say? What are our friends going to say? What are the political people around here? Because I, you know, I'm an elected official, and most of the people around here say, no, that's wrong. You know, that, you know, that you can't, you know, that can't be good. So it was completely selfish. And what impact did it have to me, rather than what impact does it have to him? I love Curry regardless, period. You know, he could do almost anything. I'm still going to love him. But then I, you know, and I still have, you know, we went a long time not telling my parents, because I didn't know how they were going to react, either to him or to me. And I didn't want that struggle in there of having the conflict about, you know, how that's going to go. With our friends, that took a while. And I still struggle with it with some of the people around here who, you know, they're just the local people, but they're, you know, they're not, you know, I don't want to, you know, say a bunch of rednecks or anything, but they're very rural, conservative people who view it as something that is wrong. Mm-hmm. And so when they find out, how do they view that? How do they view me about that? Which is it's a continuing struggle. And that's my problem, you know, and, you know, and I feel ashamed of that. But, you know, I still can't, you know, I don't know how to balance that. You know, I'm gonna love him with everything I've got, and I'll defend that choice. But it's still one of those that, okay, but I don't really want to have the conflict with people who then come around and say, well, you know, God, your boy a queer or what? You know.
Did it happen? Or did people, like, find out? I don't know how you find out. I mean, this, it feels like a very deserted area to me, coming from the city. But,
yeah. So I don't think most people around here, no.
No.
I have had someone ask me that. And
now, do you know why they asked that? Or
well, they had heard from somebody else who heard, and I said, no, he's gay. So, any other questions?
And what was the response that you got?
Well, you know, they just kind of and wandered off, you know, but that was the end of it. It's still not something I want to deal with, you know.
How did the denomination Jeff and Lee Ann belong to shape their view on same-sex relationships?
Yes, Jeff was raised Church of Christ, but...
Both of which, have a very conservative and literal interpretation to everything written in the Bible. It's this, you know, it is this. And, you know, I...
What would you say to the family, or how...
I mean, I would say that I think what they're doing, it is not supposed to be easy. The struggle that they're experiencing is perfectly, in my mind, valid, because you have to ask yourself, how do I remain convictional but still be compassionate? Mm-hmm. Because that's what it means to be Christ-like. To be Christ-like means to have your convictions, but to be compassionate toward people. So the woman who was caught in adultery, they dragged her before Jesus and, you know, said, hey, the law says that this woman was committing adultery. We ought to stone her. What do you say? Jesus says, well, if you're any of you that are without sin, you cast her. So if judgment's within your hand, if you're perfect and you can judge, you go ahead and you do so. And, of course, they examined their own hearts and said, well, I'm not perfect. So they walked off. And then who's left? Jesus and the woman. And Jesus says to her, well, where are all your accusers? Well, they've left. And he says, well, you know, I forgive you. Go sin no more. He doesn't say, go keep doing what you're doing. go continue to. He is compassionate, but he's convicted about the right and wrong of a situation. And I think I would just encourage his parents to be that, mm-hmm. to be convicted about what the Bible says, but also to be compassionate toward their son, because it is through that compassion. I believe love is the one thing that cannot be faked by the world, mm-hmm. real unconditional love. So if they continue to love him convictionally and unconditionally, and he can respect the fact that my mom and dad believe the Bible says this, and yet in every way they can, they're trying to reach out to me and love me, that will be an open door for him if he ever makes a decision to try to move back toward where he was before, where he said, I'm going to pray through this and ask God to help me.
If we're taking that from the point of gay as a sin, all of us are sinners. You know, we're all born sinners. Have a room full of people, and no one's going to be able to leave that room if you go through that list that's listed all together. If any of you haven't committed any of these, you can leave the room. Nobody would be able to leave that room. Curry's sins are no more greater or worse than mine. You know, I deal with anxiety. So, which the Lord says, do not fear about anything. So I daily worry. So I'm daily sinning. And it's part of my flesh. It's who I am. As a little girl, I used to sit and watch my parents breathe because I was petrified of them dying. I don't know where it came from. I was born with, you know, with that being part of how I did life in a scary, you know, fearful way. It's not my place to say that homosexuality is a sin. That's between Curry, for Curry's life.
Yeah.
That's between Curry and God.
You may argue that they're wrong in their conviction. That's a fine argument to have. But I don't think you should demean a group of people for trying to follow their convictions. You can argue with their convictions, say those convictions are destructive or those convictions whatever, but they are, for their understanding of the way they view the world, they're trying to follow that. So does that always look as compassionate as some people want? It might not.
He loved, like, he was attracted to boys since the age of 4.
Yeah, yeah.
And is still, and at the age of 26,
yeah,
is still attracted to men.
Yeah.
And so he was, I think he was like, well, this praying doesn't work.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I've been praying nightly and I still feel sure. like this. I'm still struggling with it.
I think that there are also, unfortunately, I think there are things that we could perhaps deal with for our whole life, that we might pray about our whole life, and they're still an issue for us. You know, maybe you're one of the blessed few that doesn't have one of those things. I know I have some of those things. I have some things that I know I've prayed about over and over again, but I'm still trying to work through those things, still trying to pray about those things, trying to have God help me walk through those things psychologically, emotionally, things like that. And so I haven't given up on those things and just said, well, that's just the way I am, because I've been that way for, you know, I'm going to be 48 years old. Well, I've been this way for 48 years. I guess that's just the way I'm supposed to be. It is my belief that God sent his son to die for us that we might be changed, not that we might stay the same. And my encouragement would just be to ask the question, and I would like to hear the answer. What, you know, what's different? I get what you're saying. Well, it's just been so long and nothing's changed, but, you know, there was a point in time where you said, I feel this is worth praying for. Why is it no longer worth praying for? Is it because of a specific relationship? So a lot of times when you go from the vagaries of things to putting something specific, like, mm-hmm. did this person meet someone? And now it's not just a vague idea of a same-sex attraction, but it is now this person who I love, those types of things. So there could be something that's changed, but I don't know that
my advice would... Should he keep fighting it?
if he believes that the Bible teaches that this is not what God wants for him.
Like, how do you feel about that? Like, if you hear the word sin, for instance, in relationship to how you feel about your sexuality or about your partner, how does that...
Sure. I mean, that was a huge distinction as far as, like, accepting it, because I did, you know, grow up with the mentality of that homosexuality is a sin, because that's the just the region that we're in, and that's what you hear in church here. But it really took fully accepting the fact that, like, I was created this way. Like, I have tried everything. I've prayed nightly to have this removed and to not be this way. And if praying for it to go away doesn't work, then I was created to be this. Mm-hmm. 'Cause how unfair of dealing of cards would that be? And I don't believe that God would do that. Mm-hmm. Create someone that has to ignore everything about themselves to fit in with the majority of how people feel like you should be. Because that's people deciding, that's not God deciding. And so I love a God that loves me. And that's important to find.
To me, the evidence of someone who is dealing with issues in their life isn't whether they are perfect or not, it's whether they're willing to struggle. Mm-hmm. So I find it, you know, what I find sad is when somebody has decided that they're just going to not struggle anymore. They're just not going to fight anymore. They're just going to do what their body's telling them to do subjectively, rather than saying, what does God tell me I'm supposed to do? Who does God tell me I'm supposed to be? I hate that discussion is no longer going on in his heart, that he's not asking that question.
When I drove out of the city of Dallas and into the country, I noticed how the landscape changed, as well as the signs alongside the road, and how the people were different from the people in the city. The culture had changed. I wonder, what part did the environment play in Jeff's and Lee Ann's journey with their son?
We live out in the country now, but we used to live within the city. Mm-hmm. And very active in all aspects of the, you know, community and school.
Even the city of Sherman is still very conservative.
It's still small.
It's in Dallas. And it's certainly not New York. You know?
No.
And one of the things I try to tell people is that live here is this isn't the way most people live. You know, this little strip of the Bible Belt here is very different than the rest of the country. And so when you look at what goes on in LA or what goes on in Chicago or New York, or, you know, it's a different place. And you can't take our ideologies and enforce those on people who live here or in Europe, or, you know, because they have very different ideologies.
Yeah.
And that's a personal thing. And you know.
I'd love to take this little bridge, because this is one of the questions that I wrote down as well. Like, you went to New York. And we met in New York.
Right.
You live in New York.
Mm-hmm.
So how did the city of New York influence your, like, development,
right,
basically, in coming out or living?
Yeah, I was going to jump in about that, too. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad you asked. Yeah, it definitely informs a different image of what my life could look like. Being in New York and seeing how accepted and celebrated the queer community is was incredibly encouraging and comforting, because I finally felt like I didn't stick out in the worst way. I wasn't an abomination amongst all these righteous people around me. So I completely understand, like, their fear of what does the community hear, how will they react, because that's what I had for myself. And, like, the grief that they had for accepting that I'm gay is grief that I had for myself. I wanted to have children, and I still want to have children, and I wanted to have, you know, you have those dreams even for yourself of, like, and that's why it's hard to, like, kind of accept that you're gay in the first place, because you want all those things. You want to feel normal in the way that the world says is normal. And so I guess living in a different environment where you see the normalcy out of what you have viewed as abnormality is, it's nice. And I can see families that are are homosexual. I see parents or children that come from homosexual households, and you can see the happiness and normalcy out of these things that you thought were going to be wiped away as a possibility. And obviously, the people that have come before me, you know, walking as far as for gay rights and equality, have opened up many doors for that to be possible. So I'm very grateful for those that have had to walk before me and made it possible to be married legally and to adopt and all these things that allow you to have the life that you thought you would have to grieve by coming out.
Do you think that the distance helped in a sort of sense for each of you, like, to process it mm-hmm. at your own pace without being...
I think so, because, you know, you weren't confronted with seeing it mm-hmm. all the time. It's there, but until, you know, something goes on that says, oh, well, okay, there it is. It's, you know, it's just in the background. You know, and over the years, like he said, it's not something that's what we talked about all the time. Most of the time we're talking about the same things we talk about anyway.
It's also one of those things where, like, you don't have to always talk about it. Mm-hmm. So in the beginning it was less conversations, like, as communication was there. We would save those for, like, when we're in person, and, like, then we could have a real heart-to-heart. But, like, communication throughout the week, by phone and things like that, it was sort of like a don't ask, don't tell situation for a while. And that was fine. Like, honestly, it's not something that I don't just, like, walk down the street every day and be like, hello, sir, I'm gay. Ma'am, I'm gay. Like,
no.
It's not... So it doesn't...
Right.
It's not always the conversation. And I think that, like, you know, there are some moments along the way that, like, there are stumbles. There was a question asked of, like, can you just not date someone right now while we kind of soak this in? So it's not always just, like...
And how did you feel about that question?
I mean, again, like, I try to come at it from the realm of understanding. And I said, okay, I'll do my best. And within a month, I had a boyfriend. So it's not something that I take as a rule. But it's also like an understanding of, like, this is a fear because they haven't had to walk through it yet. Mm-hmm. And so I knew that once it was happening, I was like, well, I'm not going to stop myself from having the life that I want. And they're going to be okay with this. And then once they were told, then it was fine. It's just like there's the fears of the unknown, like I said earlier, that... You think you don't want to be exposed to this and this and this because you're afraid of what it might do. And then once it's there, you realize that the fear was a lot larger than the reality. Every time you speak about it, it loses its power. And so I think that the more conversations that we were able to have about it and the more that we're able to get it on the table, and, like, that took time for that to feel comfortable, then the less power it had in my relationship with them and the less power it had over myself.
How did their friends and family reacted to the news of Curry being gay?
It was 3 years before we told his parents. And
before your parents, Jeff?
Yeah.
Okay.
And that was a huge conflict for me. And
because you wanted to do it soon?
Yes.
And so how was that, just, like, curious to hear, like, how was that for you, or how have you been dealing with that part over the years?
I was concerned about mostly my father's reaction to it and what kind of conflict would that put between he and Curry. Mm. And where am I going to fit in the midst of that? How do I deal with that conflict? I was dreaming things were going to happen that didn't. He did fine.
So how did you tell him? He didn't.
I think I had finally told Jeff, because everybody knew. Everybody. Yeah. You know.
I had expressed, sorry to interrupt you.
Yeah. Well, Jeff's surgery. Mm-hmm. So Curry had came in for Jeff's surgery, and Curry and his grandmother, we call her Gaga, they're very close, extremely close.
Yeah.
And Curry grieved with me one night that he felt like he was just living a lie. He was lying to her, and that bothered him. Bothered me. You know, I talk with her every day. She's one of my best friends. And she also is...
And is that your mom?
It's hers.
Okay,
it's his.
Jeff's mom. Okay.
But my mother and Jeff's mother were... I talked with them daily.
Mm.
And Jeff's mom typically more than once a day. And so I didn't share with her. And it was very hard because I get a lot of strength from her. So Curry had shared that, you know, he was just really bothered about feeling like he was lying to her. And we had even gone to New York when it was Curry had moved in with Rocky. They had gotten an apartment together, and Jeff's mother and Jeff's sister and I, all three of us went. And so that whole trip, you know, it was, you know, we were... So Jeff's sister kept her busy so I could go see his apartment. You know, it was just... it was just...
So you guys couldn't, because they didn't know yet?
Mm-mm.
So
no.
Had to make it, like...
And then I was
worried,
you know, I felt like...
It was a complicated trip.
And I felt like it was making Curry feel more...
Well, and for a long time, I wanted the decision of who they told to be up to them, because for me coming out and telling my friends and telling them... was my choice and up to me, and I don't have to see the people that they see in their everyday life, because I don't live there. And so I thought, I was like, it's in your hands, take your time as much as you need to, it doesn't affect me, of how you tell these people. And I think the longer it came down to my grandparents, and then especially the situation of his surgery, and, you know, the fragility of life being thrown into the mix, it wore on me. And like my mom had shared the recent visit of her coming to New York and having to hide bits of my story and my experience, and essentially lie to her about where I was living and who I was living with. It became a lot more conflicting, because so much time had passed and so much life had changed.
So you decided to...
So I just told... Sure. I told Jeff that I was going to tell him. And
what did you think?
And I prayed... Yeah.
By that point, it was kind of, well, you know... Okay. I mean, the ruse was not going to go on forever, mm-hmm. obviously. I mean, at some point, it had to happen, and...
They're in their 80s. So, if I can... Sure, Jeff is a money man. He's finances. That's how his head works. And he has worked very hard to provide for us. Jeff's dad has done the same. Mm-hmm. And we also look at, too, that with losing Josh and all that, when we die and all that, it's like, how do we continue past our life? How do we continue to take care of him? Because he doesn't have siblings, he has very few cousins, you know, so that's how our brain works.
Mm.
And some of that is what he's going to obtain from us financially, as well as the majority obtaining through what his grandfather has built and accomplished.
Mm.
So Jeff was afraid of risking that.
Oh.
Does that make sense?
So maybe that he would cut Curry out of the
yes.
will because
yes.
he was not okay.
Just
yes.
Cut him off, period.
Cut
him off personally, you know.
Yeah.
Financially, personally,
I
everything.
See.
Just,
okay.
you know.
But, so,
because I love my dad, but he is...
staunch.
You know, he has some very old school opinions about whether that is about sexuality or race, or, you know, if he was dating a black girl, my dad would probably frown on it.
Got it.
You know, that's, you know, oh well. Now we'll see what he feels like in dating a black guy.
Okay.
That's just a joke.
But so how did you tell him? And what was his
Well, response? We didn't tell him. So I prayed about it, and I was just like, you know, God, in your timing, because there were a lot of different things happening as far as, you know, Jeff's dad was having some heart issues and different things like that. So, you know, you wanted the timing to be, so I was just like, you know, God, you're just going to create the timing. And he did. He created, so everybody came back as far as health scares, health risks and all that. Jeff's brother broke his neck shortly after Jeff's heart surgery. Oh, okay. He was fine, so that worked out well. Jeff's dad had some heart. So there were several circumstances that came into play that I was like, okay, yes, we want to tell, but, you know, not within, because Doris was dealing with two sons having horrible things and husband. So that's Jeff's mom, Doris Gaga. So anyway, so everything worked out well. And then, so I was just praying for the opportunity, and Gaga called me and said, I'd like for you to meet me at Josh's grave. It was going to be his anniversary, October 2nd. And so I said, okay. And so I just knew it was just going to be her and I out there. And I thought it was wonderful that Curry's brother, it was almost like, you know, he was being his big brother and creating an opportunity, protect, you know, in that aspect. So I told her and told her how long we had known. I'm like I said, I'm an open book. I say it. And I told her it was up to her whether or not she told Jeff's dad. Mm-hmm. And explained that Jeff's fears and worries about Bob and the rejection, but we didn't want to tell her and make her obligated to keep something from her husband. So she called Curry on the drive home to tell him she loved him.
I mean, any time there was telling somebody and hearing the acceptance, I would just immediately break down and bawl.
Everybody that I know, Curry has received love from every one of them. So, outpouring. So, I'm very grateful.
I want to jump into something else, because then you met Rocky.
Mm-hmm.
Where did you meet him?
We met, well, on a dating site.
Yeah.
Tinder. And then, but more specifically through like a cabaret series that he was performing in that I had other friends that were performing in too. So yeah. It connected that way. And yeah, we became pretty serious pretty quickly. And,
yeah, I think you told us November, and by January they were in a relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was, and I think that may have just, like, I don't know, that felt like timing in itself, just because it was, I didn't want anything that was going to be another divide, but also, like, I finally felt free to actually be a part of something like that, finally, because all secrets were out.
Right, because did you feel, after maybe pretending, if I can call it like that, like,
sure.
For lack of a better word, for pretending for so long, all of a sudden you don't have to pretend anymore, and you can live the life that you feel like this is mine.
Right.
How, and then Rocky came and things were, all these doors opened up. Basically.
Yeah, it all kind of unfolded in a very nice way and very quickly. And, you know, I've been together 3.5 years at this point.
Yeah.
And, still, I mean, with any relationship, ups and downs, but we're still navigating it. And he's become a part of this family. He's been staying with us since May, since we came here for lockdown.
Yeah,
and he feels quite comfortable here with them and a part of them. And that's very important to me.
As a final question, I asked each of them what advice they would give to others who experience similar adversities. Here are their answers.
I mean, I would say honor yourself and be true to yourself. Because if you live for other people, then you're creating unhappiness, which will only lead to resentments and lead to poor connections with other people. Living honestly, despite what people might think of you, sets you on a better track than than hiding from it. Mm-hmm. There's strength in standing up for who you are despite backlash, and the pride and that you can obtain and the shame that you can let go of is unmatchable for hurt that other people can cause. If people don't like what you're doing, it affects them. It doesn't have to affect you.
Don't close the door. You've got to stay open and communicative. You know, the number one important thing is to love your child. You'll find your way eventually with the rest of everything going on in the world. But the first thing you got to do is don't close the door to your kid.
You think you're one way until it comes into your home. You know, we had relationships with a lot of people, you know, who had different choices, sexuality, you know, just wonderful relationships, and felt like we were very tolerant and open and all of that. And then when it comes into our house, we're like, no, wait a minute, you know, kind of a thing. So that's okay. You know, it's whatever you're feeling inside is okay, as long as you allow things to be sifted through love.
We are in this together.
Yeah.
But it doesn't have mean that we have to feel the same thing all the time.
You guys didn't rush each other, I feel.
No. No, we let each other take the time that we needed. Because there has to be space. I mean, like she has said, everyone has flaws. No one's perfect. No one's going to have the perfect response or say the right thing 100% of the time. And it takes strength to recognize that and patience. But it's necessary if you want to continue the relationship and continue the conversation. You can't have a constructive conversation if you don't hear the other person and give them room to be themselves.
I mean, yeah, if you know, you have to evaluate everybody based on your own standards. So if you want people to accept you for your differences, but you're not willing to accept them for their differences, that seems kind of counterproductive.
So it's the same, right? So it's the same, basically, as somebody who finds himself to be a homosexual who wants to have a relationship with somebody who's in the Southern Baptist Church or any, basically, maybe any church. If you want that compassion from that person for the things that you're going through in your life, you have to give it.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Thank you for listening to Real Resilience, the podcast. Connect with us through our Instagram page at Real Resilience to learn more about the other episodes and the resilient people's inspiring background stories.
When you come back down. I told you, Van Gogh has a painting, The Church with No Doors. And I believe he had did it because he wanted to be a priest or something, and they wouldn't let him, so he painted this church with no doors. But it really came to mean something to me that even if homosexuality scripturally is a sin, even if that's the case, it's no greater of a sin than jealousy, fibbing, anxiety, any sin that's listed in the Bible. They're all the same in God's eyes. But yet we as believers have made that the one sin that is condemning. And I hurt for anybody out there that has struggled with their sexuality and has been made to think from the Christian community that they are undeserving or incapable of receiving God's grace and mercy and love. And that we've done that. you know, that really hurts me.